You are listening to episode number 112 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast and Cream.
Unless you're deaf, in which case you hear nothing.
Welcome to the 112th edition of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. As always and forever will be your host Iggy, a.k.a. Ben, who loves Sailor Moon. I don't give a fuck what you think. Joining me tonight, the man who seems to want to belittle me for my love of Sailor Moon, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian, welcome to the show.
You watch it for the stories.
He watches it for the pedophiles.
And, of course, the man who loves his giraffe porn, Taser.
Giraffe porn images rule in effect, yay!
And the man who thinks he can talk down a troll, Arnold. Arnold, welcome to the show.
Arnold the Troll Slayer. Arnold the Troll Slayer!
Oh my god, I seriously think this has to be an act from Ion Fan. This just, it's just too retarded to be real.
Actually, I was going to put him and Taz in the same boat. That's why I gave Arnold the double headshot.
I still think Deadpool and Taz are the same person. I still think that.
Still that talk.
Two halves of the same disease mind?
Pretty much, yeah. Anyways, so we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, whether it's comics, movies, TV, video games, maybe porn one day when I feel like it. I don't know. But let's get right into it. Over the past, since post-San Diego Comic-Con, we're all aware of Marvel Now, which I'm really getting tired of saying that. We have received teasers. We know some books are ending come September, October, right, Brian?
Yeah, around that line.
All right. We know Thor's ending, Iron Man's ending, Captain America's ending, yada, yada, yada. So over the past has been what a week over a week and a half now.
Yeah, actually, it's been over the past week
of teasers, of single adjectiveless teasers, teasing books relaunching in November. Brian, will you please give us the creators' names plus the title that we're going to be working with?
Well, alrighty then. Let's start off at the top of the list with the first one being posted by our very own Arnold Alfred. Yeah, Arnold, I'm looking at you. It was Worthy, which is supposedly the new Thor title being taken on by Jason Aaron and Asad Ribic. Coming up next after that is, of course, Chimichangas, which you can only assume is Deadpool being taken over, oddly enough, by Brian Posehn, the stand-up comedian, I believe it's Gary Duggan or Greg Duggan, something like that, and then Tony Moore doing the art. And honestly, I'm kind of afraid for my favorite character right now.
Why? Well,
I'll get to that in a minute, yeah. Next up, we have Family, which I can only assume is the Fantastic Four, being covered by Matt Fraction and Mark Bagley. After that is Soldier, which we can all assume is Captain America, being covered by Rick Remender, fuck yes, and John Romita Jr., which I know Ben's just orgasming over right now, I'm almost certain. Benny boy, you all right?
You
got it.
Yeah.
After that is Extended, which is the Future Foundation, being covered by also by Matt Fraction and Allred.
Mike Allred, fantastic artist, Mike Allred.
Yep. And then we have X-Men Legacy, and being covered by Spurrier and who I don't know who those people are. Are they new talent, or is that just...
Might be.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm guessing new talent. And... that's it. That's the line of Oh, and also, just as a side note, Brubaker has confirmed he's staying on the Winter Soldier book post-revamp.
So it looks like that book's not getting canceled, along with Daredevil and Defenders, which Editor-in-Chief Axel Alonso has confirmed it was not right to interrupt the scheduled programming for those books. So unless they're getting canceled with Defenders, those books will be continuing on, not being renumbered. So yay for that.
Woo!
So yes, adjective list guesses. I am very excited that Rick Remender is finally, Uncanny Avengers was the first part, but finally getting to do his dues, and that he's going to be on Captain America with my favorite, so my favorite writer, team of my favorite artists on Captain America, a character who I really enjoy. That should be fun and interesting to see what, how fucked up Remender can make Cap's life even more. So that'll be interesting to watch. The Chimichangas was possibly my favorite one just because I just LOL'd forever. It was hilarious. I'm very curious on seeing Jason Aaron write Thor. It's very different from what he's written before. You know, he can write, you know, if you look at a book like what he did with Wolverine versus Wolverine the X-Men, two completely different titles despite featuring the same starring character. So, you know, what does he do with the God of Thunder? And Esad Ribic, you know, his artist, you know, he speaks for himself. So I would love to see what he does. To see Fraction take over FF, I'm of course, now it seems that Bleeding Cool was wrong, which I'm glad that it's not LaRocca, but Mark Bagley. Sucks that it's Greg Land and Kieran Gillen stuck with on Iron Man. That sucks.
They all look the same. They all look the same.
Well, Pepper Potts is going to have orgasmic faces.
Which, oh, God.
The only book that I'm really going to, I know 100% that I'm going to buy is probably Captain America by Rick Remender and Brubaker. I'm going to try it, given his track record, what he's written, the stuff it does. And if I don't like it, I'll
drop it. Yeah, X-Force.
I didn't like Secret Avengers and I dropped that, so I'm not against dropping a Rick Remender title. As long as he still is on X-Force, we're okay. And it seems he's still going to be on that book for a while. So I am generally excited come November and what Marvel Now is actually going to be with these titles and these characters and this new direction that they're going with. Brian, Chimichangas.
Okay, yeah. So obviously the elephant in the room for me personally is Chimichangas. Word is that Brian Posehn, who some of you may know as a stand-up comedian, television actor, et cetera, will be taking over co-writing duties for the new Deadpool title. I'm actually completely unsure of how to feel about this because...
Well, Jerry Dugan's he's not an established writer, but he's written comics before. He did a book called The Infinite Horizon, which was a take on the Odyssey, but in a modern setting.
Okay. So with these two people in the book, I mean, I guess I can take some comfort in the fact that there is something of a comic book writer, someone who's been there before on the book. But the fact that Brian Posehn is being put on a title right now actually kind of alarms me. Just because, you know, he has never written comics before and he mostly does comedy. So, you know, Deadpool, as it was going now, I don't want it to turn it completely into a joke book. It had some aspects of, you know, action and intrigue and stuff like that. And yet they're going to go ahead and just throw a comedian in there. And they think I don't know what the idea was behind that. It really just baffles me.
Well, I mean, what if they actually want to, unlike the distinguished competition, get legit new talent from outside sources?
Okay, that's a fair point. It's fair enough, but still, putting an untested newbie on a book is just...
Okay, the way you're making it describe it is if he's going to be writing it alone, but he's not. He has a guy who's actually written comics before, so...
Fair enough.
I mean, it's not like he's going to... I would understand your concern if he was doing it all by himself, but he's co-writing it.
That's true. Okay, so maybe my fear is misplaced, but keep in mind Deadpool is one of my favorite characters, so it's hard for me to be, you know, unbiased when I'm dealing with this stuff. Outside of that, another book that caught my eye was actually the Captain America title coming up with Rick Remender and John Romita Jr., and it'll be the first time I put Cap really on a priority to actually take the book off the shelf and read it, because I've dabbled with it a little bit before and leading up to him being killed back post-Civil War, but I never really stuck with the book for any extended length of time. So this will be definitely a different version of Cap, I would assume. And if not, well then, hey, that's cool too. But as long as Remender brings the same talent, he's going to bring it to Uncanny X-Force, I will definitely buy it. And also, of course, Jason Aaron being put on Thor is... It's smart, because the guy's had mostly success you know, throughout Marvel. He's had one or two speed bumps, cough, cough, Incredible Hulk, cough, cough. But, you know, if he's going to go ahead and do a book like Thor, I hope he knows what he's doing, because, you know, it's not like it's Wolverine or Ghost Rider or anything like that.
Those,
you know,
characters are also nothing alike, so...
And gritty, dark, kills a lot of people.
Okay, but Wolverine the X-Men is nothing like Ghost Rider.
That's true, but he didn't write... Well, actually, he did. Oh, yeah, so... Shit. Okay, so I guess I have some faith in that, as well as Asad Ribic. I'm happy to see him on a book again, because I miss him in Uncanny X-Force, and I'll be looking forward to him taking up a new book. Rest of things, do not care.
Did we mention that confirmed that Mark Waid and Lineal Francis Yu are on Hulk?
We did not.
Indestructible, mention. So yay Mark Waid. Hopefully he can bring the success that was on Daredevil over to Hulk.
You got it, Waid. Got it.
Wade's on a hot streak right now. But the man who hates Mark Waid this year for whatever god-awful reason, Taser, you're the man who doesn't give a shit about creative teams, but do you have anything to say about these adjective teasers?
Waid and you on Hulk, all right, I like Yu's art, and the hell was that book? Captain whatever the fuck? That was Captain Marvel?
Superior?
Yeah, thank you. That was a good book. Mark Waid has... I haven't read anything bad by Mark Waid I don't think ever. You know, so, I mean, that's a credit to him. It's Hulk, though, so I'm really not that interested. And I think I had kind of said this before, not much of this new stuff being offered sounds interesting to me. So, and especially not... just like the little teaser bits of information. So I'm going to still be mostly disinterested, but I'll look and see what, you know, at least some teaser art or, you know, what comes down the pike, and maybe I'll give it a look, see and determine if it's worth time, because it damn sure ain't worth my money. Other than that, no, I don't have anything else really to add. Same where I was before on the matter.
Alrighty then. Boop. Arnold.
Yo.
What do you think about these adjectives?
Some of them cool. They all have me intrigued. I liked some of the, you know, it is a lot of people that I like on interesting things. Remender being on Captain America has me intrigued, because I do like some of his stuff. But like you, I'm not afraid to drop stuff of his that I don't like, as I too dropped Secret Avengers, because it just wasn't my cup of tea. But yeah, it's got me intrigued on some stuff. Iron Man, the land is definitely screaming no at, for me picking up that book if I had interest in it. And Kieran Gillen, his work on Uncanny is also not holding me either, so that's kind of a double no-go on that, so I don't think I'll be trying Iron Man again. But like I said, Remender on Captain America has me intrigued to actually pick up a Captain America book. I've never read a Captain America book. I think I only picked up the issue that he died in, and that was about it that I've read of Captain America in his own book. But creative team is one thing, story is another. You can have a great creative team, but if they want to take them some outlandish ass route or something that doesn't fit, it doesn't matter who's writing it. If it's stupid, it's still going to be stupid. But it's intriguing to see who's doing what, and some people, some names I wouldn't think of being attached to things, especially the randomness of Brian Possum, however you pronounce his name, his last name, on that. I feel like that came out of nowhere. It's not like you've heard of him writing other stuff here or there, just all of a sudden, boom, he's on Deadpool. Not to say that he can't write it, who knows, he can come out and make some amazing stuff. So we'll see on that. Deadpool still not a big interest for me, sorry.
It's okay.
So I won't knock it, but I get enough of Deadpool from X-Force. And that's pretty good for me.
All right. So what I'm noticing is that they're basically switching. I mean, they're basically playing musical chairs, and to me, I like that. I like that aspect of it, especially as a person who follows creators. You know, sometimes, I mean, these guys have been on these respective characters, you know, for a long time, you know, at least in this current era, what defines long, Taser, this is like a little second, but, you know, putting Fraction on Fantastic Four and FF, that's a completely different book than, say, Iron Man, and then, of course, Thor is nothing like Ghost Rider, Wolverine, the X-Men. Remender, you know, he's known for the make the characters' lives as miserable as possible. What's he going to do with a book like Captain America? You know, I liked it because it's taking the writers out of a certain comfort zone that maybe some of them have built up, either consciously or subconsciously, and let's see what you do with something new in a new situation, in a new set of circumstances. You know, it could breed either A, for some horrible stories, or B, with some pretty terrible stories. You know, so that's what has me most interested in the fact that they're actually putting different people in different books and not relaunching the title, but keeping the same guy who was on the book that was previously before the relaunch even happened. Look at Green Arrow. That's why it's shit. And why the purple guy is much better than him. So, you have any final comments before we move on?
No, nope. Let's move on.
All right, so let's move on to, we obviously know that next year we're going to get Iron Man 3 with Ben Kingsley as the Iron Man, as the Mandarin. It'd be cool if he was playing Iron Man, though. but we also, I believe it's November of that year, we will be getting Thor Dark Worlds, obviously. So with that, it's called Thor Dark Worlds, we have some casting news on a certain Dark Elf, right, Brian?
Oh, we do indeed, sir. It has been reported that Christopher Eccleston, most known for playing Doctor Who during the 2005 series of the BBC show, has been in talks and finally confirmed as the main villain for Thor the Dark World, as in the ruling Dark Elf of Svartalfheim. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's about right.
Awesome.
Malekith the Accursed. Yeah, like half blue, half blackish kind of design.
The name escaped me.
Malekith the Accursed. This just confirms that confirming my theory that they're building towards Surtur, because in the spoiler alert, 3, 2, 1, Malekith was one of the machinations that Loki used to bring Surtur to out of the realm of, what is that place he's from? Muspelheim or something?
Muspelheim.
So Malekith is one of the characters that they that was used by Loki to get to Surtur, to get Surtur out. I don't know if they're going to go that route, but you're kind of, to me, it seems like they're laying the groundwork for Surtur, which would be fucking awesome. That's cool. I mean, I'm glad that they're going to be venturing outside the world, into the Nine Worlds, and that, you know, the Dark Elves are going to, hopefully, they'll be better than NBA basketball players than the last one. Taser, you're closer to this. What do you think about this news?
Oh my god. Yeah, that was loud.
But did I get loud? Oops, sorry. Yeah. Anything that comes with the touch of Simonson, I'm all behind 100%. I eagerly look forward to when we get our hands on the full tasting event. I shall be there to revel and roll and gorge myself on its contents. A good day shall be had by, I don't know about all, but by me, definitely. Yes, it shall be mine, and it will be sweet. Yay.
Brian, what about you? What do you think about this casting news for Thor Dark Worlds?
I'm about to lose a major nerd cred here, because actually I've never watched Doctor Who before, so...
I don't give
Boom.
A... Doctor Who can kiss my ass for all the people who love it.
Depends on which Doctor Who. Oh, he played Destro in G.I. Joe. Well, okay, then. Oh, God.
Why don't
you get I can't say I've kept up with this guy's career, but... apparently he does have a few roles under his belt, seems to be fairly talented, and outside of Doctor Who, looks like he plays mostly villains anyway, so he should have it down pat by the time they start rolling, so I am totally looking forward to that, and, let's hope we get a Surtur out of this, because that would be sweet, sweet to see.
I hope they do him justice. Because last thing I want is Sutter to just be like, you know, oh, he's only 10 feet tall. No! I want Sutter should be, you know, big freaking 25-story guy. You know?
Yes, yeah, he has to be huge.
Yeah, no, freaking huge. I want what the Fantastic Four Silver Surfer movie denied me. I want big effing thing that needs to get smacked. That's what I want. And I want him to have a big effing sword.
The sword that will lit the nine worlds on fire. Read Simon's... Read the... Me and Taser have... This is, if you know it's good, if both Taser and I agree on this, just read his run already. So, Arnold, what do you think about this casting for Malekith the Accursed?
I'm not going to lie. I'm not ashamed to say, as I've said before, I don't know much about the Thor mythos, so I don't really...
smite you right where you
sit. Boo!
We all have something we don't know about. Fuck yeah. but, so I honestly have no idea who the character is that he's supposed to play, but I will take you guys' word for it, as I often do in matters like this, that he is badass and something to be reckoned with. I do like Christopher Eccleston, and I have seen all the things that they've credited him in the article and that he's been in, G.I. Joe aside, unfortunately, for him and us and everybody else. But I like the guy. I just recently watched, because I just started watching Doctor Who, so I only just finished watching the season with him in it, and I liked him in that. I liked him as an actor a lot, so I'm from an actor's choice standpoint, I think he's great. You guys would know better if he's great to play that character. But just going off of his acting career, that I'm happy for.
And Brian, we already got your thoughts on this character.
Yes.
So, yeah, this should be fun. I look forward to November. That'd be winter. No, it'd be fall, right? It's cold. Winter 2013, Thor, The Dark Worlds. I look forward to the last ending credit scene being Surtur for Thor 3. All right, let's move on to the final, I guess, more cinematic news, which would have to do with, it seems like, tradings with Marvel Studios and Fox Studios. Brian, will you lead us into the details?
Yes, actually, some news just came in as we were talking about Christopher Eccleston, so let me brief you now. Initially, this portion was going to be about Fox and Marvel doing some horse trading, in that in exchange for Marvel allowing Fox more time with Daredevil, they would get the rights to use Galactus, who would supposedly play a big starring role in an upcoming movie that they had planned, and were also perhaps eyeing rights to use the Silver Surfer. However, news has just come in from Deadline Hollywood reporting that, in fact, this is false, and that the real talks are about Fox producing a Daredevil movie only if Marvel is willing to co-finance it, because they're not really that gung-ho about making another Daredevil reboot. And as they are really, really interested in making a new Fantastic Four series, they would be crazy to give up the rights and are actually focusing on making that right now. And so Fox execs deny that these talks have taken place. And well, not that they're taking place, simply that the content is different. And so essentially what we have now is that there is no Galactus coming to Marvel Cinematic anytime soon, nor Silver Surfer, and that in all likelihood Daredevil will soon revert back to Marvel anyway, free of cost.
Cool. Yeah, the sooner they can get those hands away from Fox, the better.
Yeah.
Lord knows I don't trust them with Daredevil or the Fantastic Four anymore. Yay.
I guess. I mean, we already have a big bad cosmic guy showing off in Marvel, so it's not like they need another one.
No, but it'd be overkill. But it'd be nice to, like, you know, if they have the rights to use the Fantastic Four, that means, like, in the Avengers, you can see the Baxter Building, which is not much, but it's nice, you know?
Well, there was never any alleged talk about the Fantastic Four, just Galactus and maybe the Silver Surfer. That would be about it.
What if the Silver Surfer was in the Avengers movie with Thanos in some weird-ass fashion? I don't know, but it'd be cool. It would be cool. All I'm saying is the faster that these characters can revert back to Marvel Studios, the better.
Oh, without a doubt.
You know? Maybe this time they won't cast a fucking Latina to play a white woman? Who knows? yeah, who knows? Taser, what do you have to say about any of this shit?
Eh.
He does not care.
Eh.
See, that's Taser talk for I don't care.
Arnold.
It'd be cool. It'd be fun to see more people within the Marvel Universe, and which would allow them to show up in other movies. So from that regard, I think it's great. I'm not in a super rush to see Galactus or Silver Surfer in a movie just now. Like we've said, we've already teased our cosmic level villain. Not saying that you can't use them as a tease for another cosmic villain, but it's cool that we have the opportunity to do that now. Hopefully we'll be able to do it with some of the others, like the ones people really want to see even more, like the X-Men and Spider-Man. But that's a long ways coming.
So yeah, not much to say on this.
I'm sure there would have been, but like I said, this news just broke, and so, you know, it was like...
Yeah, we've been hearing the same thing for the longest time, though, so... I mean, the best thing we can hope is that they all get reverted back to Marvel where they belong, and, you know, so, yes. Let's move on, because I got shit. let's move on to our Book of the Week, which featured a archer. Is it Green Arrow? No, this isn't D-Cups.
D-Cups!
This, our Book of the D-Cups. Week this week, which was the most anticipated and very well reviewed Hawkeye number one. I believe this is one of the Hawkeye's first solo ongoing, like just by himself, I believe so.
First non-mini, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, he didn't get a character, but at least had an ongoing like at some point, but he didn't. So, anyways, this is the... written by Matt Fraction and the returning artist David Aja, finally returned to the comics after a good decent hiatus from after he did Immortal Iron Fist, which was awesome. This issue was really interesting in the fact that there was no Hawkeye in it, except for like the first two pages. By the way, what a way to open up a page, open up a comic with that look. The way that David Aja has the panel of Hawkeye shooting the arrow and just the perspective and everything around him.
Definitely.
This is basically a one-shot. There's not a to-be-continued or a hook into the series, which is different from Fraction's sort of take. I mean, he's the guy who's known as the most decompressed guy in Marvel next to Bendis. So this is basically, you know, Clint is living in this area, living in a building, I guess, and some people are being moved out. And he doesn't like that, and of course, there's nothing that he can do. And he, you know, he basically tries to fight back against them. You know, he feels like what he's doing is wrong, and he tries to actually buy the money for, I believe, what is it, $12 million?
He initially tries to buy the rent for everybody. He tries to pay off the landlord.
Yeah, and so he gets into a fight, they had a dog there, and the dog actually gets hit in traffic. And he takes it to the vet, and he gets the building, doesn't he?
In the end, he does. Yes.
Yeah. So, and my favorite little bit is like he goes, "It's okay, everybody. I'm an Avenger." It's like, and like the guy holding his cat's like, "Are you Iron? Are you like Iron Fist or something?" I just thought that was
in joke.
I didn't even realize that until you said it. I just thought that was funny because he's blonde.
It's an in joke because the last book they worked on together, of course, was.
Yeah. So basically, Hawkeye rescues the dog, and it turns out the dog's name is Arrow, and he kind of rolls his eyes at it, and you know, to be continued, despite that it ends the story. I thought it was really nice the fact that it was a self-contained one-shot story about a little introspective on who this Clint Barton is, and where he's from, and the fact that it wasn't put in a weird or fantastical or adventure situation, because if you really wanted to read that, you would just read Avengers or read any past Avengers stuff where you could see Clint Barton and stuff, but it's a very street-level sort of perspective of Clint Barton that you don't normally get to see at all. You mostly get to see the superhero side of him because of, you know, where he's at in the book. You know, I thought the Russian guy said bro a lot.
Oh, shit. Which it was the story of
bro! Bro!
Which I thought was like, that's fucking annoying. But I got over it. But
bro?
Do Russian guys really talk like that? I mean, I've never met
a
Russian.
Yes, bro. You don't know, bro? Because that's American, bro. It's not even Russian. It's like basically anybody from the Eastern Bloc, you know, Czechoslovakian or Turkey, bro, that's American, yes, bro, you know, that's why they were all wearing tracksuits. You know, yeah, it's because, bro, I wear tracksuits and I wear gold chain around the neck because I'm just American and I want to fit in, bro. Even though it was like using the wrong context a few times.
Yeah, bro. So,
bro.
But the real shining star of this to me is David Aja.
Indeed.
Aja.
Oh my God, it was he. Uh-huh. At on the surface, it doesn't look like a lot, but if you examine it, look at what he's doing. The man is a very skilled cartoonist. He is very skilled with the pencil. Look at how many panels he can pack in per page. I think at one point there's like 12 panels per page, but it never feels like, usually when you get that many panels per page, it kind of feels claustrophobic. This is a lot in there.
Never read stuff by Giffen, have you?
Probably not. But I'm just going off of what I see here. He doesn't, if you look at it, he doesn't use a lot of lines. It's a lot of, like, I don't want to say empty spaces, but there's a lot of space in between things. It's not overly heavily rendered, like Jim Lee or anything. But it's just very, very simple, but fantastic cartooning. It's a little different from what he did on Iron Fist. It's a little different. I think on Iron Fist his stuff is a lot worker. This one's a lot more relaxed. A lot more clean, which is what I love. I think he's the perfect artist for this book. Plus, Hawkeye kicking the chair into the traffic was fucking hilarious. Because that to me is something that Clint Barton would totally do. But yeah, I as a person who's not a Hawkeye fan at all, I was totally won over by this issue, and I'm interested to see where they're going to take the series. So I give it a solid 4 out of 5 for me. If you are interested in Hawkeye or Clint Barton as a character, check this out. At least check out this first issue. Let's go to Taser. What did you think of this issue?
I liked it. It just seemed to be, urban gritty. Let's dial back the fantasticness that we're used to seeing with Hawkeye and put him in something that's, very, 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 very street level, as if, this were an issue of Daredevil or some bullshit like that, tossing a dog so we get the Archie whiz. Oh, man. Add a couple of Europeans who go, bro, a lot. The only thing that didn't fit with me was Hawkeye living in a neighborhood like that. And this is him having, was brought up in the boards by West, him having an Avengers stipend. He can afford better than this. I know Cap had done this at one point, but that was back when he was actually trying to have a life outside of the Avengers, and he, was living in an apartment building. It was more like a tenement. And, okay, I'm dating myself. This is back during the Bernie Rosenthal days.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, this just goes back a long
way. Mark Gruenwald, that's the days you're talking about.
Yes, actually a little bit earlier than that, too. Well, yeah, Gruenwald was with him, but I'm not sure if he was the EOC at that point. But regardless, you have non-big hero Hawkeye here. And like I had said just before we started the show, I miss the guy with the funky headgear. I don't mind this guy. If this was the first time we'd really seen him before, I would have no problem with this. But I've read Hawkeye for 30-plus years. I've seen the various, different iterations of him. I read that mini back in the 80s. I was there for West Coast Avengers for a long stint. I didn't read, what the hell?
Thunderbolts?
I didn't read Thunderbolts because that just didn't interest me, and after that I started reading Marvel. But I've seen the whole disassembled, return from the dead, in New Avengers, and now he's Ronin, and all this other stuff. And yeah, this was a guy who wasn't super, but was still attached to super stuff. This guy is normal. that's really what this says. This paints Hawkeye as a completely normal person, and it kind of puts me off. You know, I'm not used to viewing him in this way. You know, the bit where he's walking with the three-piece suit and the shoulder bag eating a slice of pizza. That, to me, right there, well done. It fits the context of the story that Fraction's telling, but the fanboy in the back of my head's going, what the fuck is that? No! You know? The bit with the dog was cute, but I saw that coming. As soon as they showed the dog, I went, no, don't. Damn it, he got a pet. Damn it the hell. If it wasn't a dog, it was going to be like some teen or something like that. You know, he was going to get some humanizing aspect. You know, something to really kind of, oh, let's feel for him by how he relates to somebody that he really has to look after. Because he doesn't have a wife anymore, you know, fortunately, you know, for a Fraction, I guess. And, you know, he gets involved.
He's got that Spider-Woman tail waiting for him.
Well, I bet you, I'm willing to lay, well, I'm not going to say money, but I'll just make a friendly no prize bet right now. I bet you we won't see her for at least the first 6 issues.
Who?
Spider-Woman.
No, she's well, we know, I know Kate Bishop's going to be showing up, so.
Yeah, but I bet you we won't be seeing a whole lot of fantasticness with her. It'll probably be, you know, coincidentally, and they'll talk about stuff and, you know, what she may want to do. And maybe they'll go out on patrol, but it won't be anything like, hey, look, there's people there and they need arrows put in them. Let's go have some fun. She'll probably come at him and she won't be sure what to do with her life because Eli is gone. This story was good. Don't get me wrong. I like the story. It's just, I'm not used to viewing Hawkeye as normal.
Maybe it's a different perspective. You know?
It is. It is. And it's not bad. Don't get me wrong. I don't like it. You know, I did like it. It was a good read. I enjoyed it. I'm just so not used to seeing him like this. Overall, I'd give this a 4 Warriors out of 5. Fraction story was decent. Aja's art was actually, it fit the story. You know, everything worked together in this book. So, yeah, I think you should go get it. Go out there. Get it! It's worth the time.
I'm actually surprised Taze actually liked Hawkeye number one. So, let's go on to Brian. What did you think of Hawkeye number one?
Oh, gosh. Well, I was so excited to finally see Fraction and Aja back working together. And this book did not disappoint me. Hawkeye number one, or as I affectionately like to call it, a bro and his dog. This book was just, it was
that's
great.
That's the title of the episode, isn't it? Bro.
A bro and his dog.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, it definitely is, I agree with Taser, it's a different side of Hawkeye than we normally see. This is basically just him hanging out as being Clint Barton, you know, doing the right thing. It almost felt like it could be like one of those action movies where the guy takes on the responsibility of everyone for himself and just kind of goes off and does shit, only he's also just happens to be Hawkeye half the time. So it was definitely weird to be seeing Clint take on like this mundane, what seems like mundane stuff. And for him to take on these Eastern European gangsters, quote unquote, and just, it was weird, man. Taser, you hit the nail on the head when you said it was just, it's weird. It's not the Hawkeye we're used to seeing, but it works somehow.
Yeah,
it does work.
Exactly.
Definitely works, especially with Aja doing the artwork, because it I've missed him. I don't know how he didn't get a consistent job until now, since freaking Iron Fist.
I think it's because he didn't want to, because I think he has other stuff he wants to do.
Right. Well, that said, the guy needs more mainstream work, because this book was just beautiful. It definitely felt like it highlights how, you know, like New York in August, and it just, it seems to just make everything work. It's a big part of the book, and it just adds such beauty and realism and a gritty kind of feel to it, and
the book is just chock full of all these character moments, like Clint Barton chucking the wheelchair in the middle of the street, and then the part where he's just sitting there in the vet's office telling himself, who the hell throws a dog into traffic? Like, who does that? And then just him apparently hanging out on the roof at like a party type thing going on with the tenants, and he just happens to be Hawkeye, but he's trying to show off and all that stuff. It really, really highlights Clint Barton outside of Hawkeye. And I think if that's what they were going for in this one issue, then they definitely achieved it. So my hat's off to the pair for this wonderful, wonderful first issue. I cannot wait to keep up with the rest of it. And it's just, it was a great, great book. I really, really recommend this book. I give it a 4.5 out of 5. Only thing that really kind of bugged me was the placing of all the pages and frames and stuff kind of threw me off a little bit. Like, which was this a flashback? Is this going on right now? It just, everything kind of felt a little bit jumbled around. But beyond that, I can work past that. It was a great, great issue. I recommend you check it out, definitely. Especially if you liked the Mortal Iron Fist back when it was going. Check it out.
And last but not least, the trait shooter, Arnold. Arnold, what'd you think of Hawkeye number 1?
Shit.
That was not a gay reference, I swear to God.
It's cool. I actually really dug this book. It was a fun read, nice, kind of down-to-earth, street-level book, which, whether there's stories about them floating around a lot, I don't read that many of them, and when done well, I really enjoy them, and should probably read some more street-level and kind of gritty books. But I really dug this. It was fun. I agree. As soon as you made the comment about it being, like, you know, the action movie, kind of the lead of that, who takes on the whole community's role kind of thing. That I was like, yeah, it kind of was like that. Now that you mention it, but I liked it. The art was fantastic. Fit the tone of the book, in my opinion, perfectly. It worked really well for what they were trying to portray. But I liked it a lot. I was very much intrigued and interested to see where this book was going or what it would, you know, how it would pan out, because I've never really read much of Hawkeye. I just don't know that much about him, aside from the general history that, you know, we backtrack through and read in other books. But it's kind of good to see him as the focus, because I do like him as a character, and I think he's fun. He's done well. He's got some good comedy about him. That Russian dude in this was just ridiculous. I've never seen the word bro so many times in a book in my life. But I really dug it. All in all, I will give it a 4 out of 5.
All right, so it seems like it's a very interesting take, a very different take, which is hard to come by in superhero comics. So I think, you know, to me it's a breath of fresh air. You know, not everything, at least to me, has to be the fantastical. Sometimes it's nice to see the other side of things. But let's see where this series goes, because we have no indication on where Fraction is going to take it based on this issue, because it could literally go in any direction now. But I think it's going to stick more street level, if anything, if that's a basis. But let's get on to individual reviews, because I love it so much, I need to talk about Defenders number 9. Am I the only one out of all of us who are still reading it?
Yep.
Oh, yep. You guys are missing...
No, I'm reading.
I never read it to begin with.
Oh, you're missing greatness personified. So in the last issue, the engines broke. They shut the engines down, which is something you don't want to do. And the Defenders have been transported to 1960s during the Steranko-esque times, where Nick Fury, and they want to recruit Nick Fury to tell him about the engine, because as I stated before in previous podcasts, the engine, once you see it, you know what it is, but the minute you try to tell somebody what it is, the words escape you. So it's the ultimate hiding device. So basically, they were transported to the 1960s, and to recruit Nick Fury. Red She-Hulk is like a Playboy bunny, and she's like in this tight little one suit. And my God, Jane McKelvey draws the best looking women in comics ever. They're just gorgeous, and apparently they're based off of real women. So what does that tell you? So basically, the funniest panel of the week has to go to Nick Fury is in a Hydra club, Hydra, the terrorist organization, and
he gets a Hydra.
He gets a complimentary drink from a gentleman. Nick Fury looks over. It's Hitler as Frankenstein.
What?
Hitler, like with all like the nut bolts, and like he had been patched up, and like. He's like offering Nick Fury a drink. Like, how about a drink, man? And Nick Fury's like, German whiskey? Fuck no. So the sky is melting, like it's all weird and colorful, and like if somebody takes a badass trip, and they're basically trying to figure out a way to come home. LMD bots show up. There's a great double page splash of the Defenders fighting Hydra agents. She-Hulk taking out everybody. Black Cat's involved in this as well. Everything about it, like the plot seems overly crazy, but yet at the same time, it's extremely simple. And now they are transported back home towards the end of the issue, but now they're all shrunk down to micro size, or at least not micro size, but ant size, because in the cover for next issue it shows Ant-Man on the cover. So this book continues to impress me. It's probably my favorite books going on at Marvel. It's just these offbeat characters who really don't get a lot of screen time, and seeing just let a writer run wild with them without ramifications, and just the craziness ensues, and the art is so pristine and clean and beautiful, and just it's everything I could want in a Defenders comic, you know. If you aren't reading this, I want to come to your house and just choke you out because you're making a retarded decision. I give this book a.
Oh, you got three stops.
I got a five. I give this book a 5 out of 5. This is going to be a contender for Book of the Year with X-Force. That's how good it is in my opinion. I love this book. Please don't let it cancel. Please don't let it get canceled. All you fools need to buy this. Need to buy this now. Because good comics need to be preserved. That being said, let's go to Taser first and foremost with I Don't Give a Fuck.
Wow. Seriously?
What happened?
I think you just got segued into.
Is that what that is? Oh, okay. What was I supposed to be doing again?
You were reviewing a book, Taser.
Oh, yeah. The first X-Men! Woohoo! Before Xavier's Dream, there was the first X-Men.
How was that even possible if Xavier created the X-Men?
You want to go with Xavier? You want to go there? Let's go there.
Oh, God. Just get to the review.
First panel. Harlem, many years ago. You've got, big burly Wolverine with the cowboy hat and jacket strolling down the street, walking past a bunch of black people. Now, right then and there, okay, I know when this is. I'm dating myself. B, he's in Harlem. And C, I'm black, so of course I know this. This has got to be like the 70s. Because the way people are drawn, and this is Neil Adams. Neil Adams has a touch for this segment of history in comics especially, and we're figuring this is about 73 to 78, you know, this is the 70s. He's walking down and he could do that. This is Harlem, they wouldn't really mess with you, you know, that's all fantasy. And he was asked by somebody that he had some ties with to please help find my son, he doth have issues, I need your help. So he gets a whiff. He goes tracking the boy. Not really boy, but guy. And he finds this dude, and he's sitting on a park bench. And right immediately, you know, my mind goes, oh, look, heroin addict. You know, because he's kind of like, I'm thinking that. I can't help it. And he goes, hey, Tony, son, what's wrong with your boy? Let me help you. And then Tony looks up with glowy eyes and glow mouth, and goes, boom, boo! Oh, wow. That the next page is just a full panel explosion. He went kabablooey. So, a person nearby happens to go, hey, bro, are you okay, bro? And right there, the dialogue just completely F's me up. Because if this is the time period, and I understand this is a nitpick, so I'm saying this right now. I understand what it is. it still bothered me. The dialogue in this was totally 1995 and plus, not 1970 appropriate. And it just bugged the shit out of me. I was just like, no, you, ah, damn it, ah! But whatever, I got over it. So, you know, guy asked if Logan's okay. He's okay. He gets up, and naturally, he's not bleeding or anything, because this Logan doesn't have the metal. Yes, this is that far back.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's, he's, you know, he's disturbed by what's going on, and apparently he had gone back and done some investigation and found out that the government, yeah, they're starting to do that stuff now. They're going after people like us, and he's got Creed with him. So this is that far back. Him and Creed are working together. Of course, Creed is more mercenary-like than he was. And Logan, he's all, yeah, but we got to do this because, you know, what if somebody had been there for you, Creed, and Creed goes, okay, you're going to pay me though, right? You know? You know, but there's an interesting bit. They're walking through the Bronx Zoo as this is happening. Excuse me, not Bronx, Central Park Zoo. And you see the lions and tigers react to Sabretooth's presence. And he's just looking at them like, roar. He goes, roar! You see them back the fuck up. they sneak into this place in Quantico down in Virginia, and they, you know, they're looking for info, and here goes Wolverine with his katana blade, ha-ta, because, you know, he doesn't have the metal. And they come and they find the kid that had blown himself up, and he's being something done that looks like they're giving him bone spurs or whatever. You know, they cut him free, and I'm not sure if they took the body or not, but, no, excuse me, they don't take the body, but he encounters a bunch of guys wearing not quite mandroid armor, and they think, oh, we were looking for you guys, woo-wee, yee-haw, all that other stuff. They, of course, get their asses handed to them, because what are they going to do? They're just a bunch of, oh, my God, they've got sharp claw thingies. Oh, no. And, of course, Wolverine's bone claw sliced through metal. Yeah. Okay. Right. So he just accept that and move on. But okay, the whole purpose of them going there was so Wolverine could take and get some information and find out who else is going to be targeted. And then him and Creed hit the road to start looking for people. Guess what he's doing? He's picking up orphans. Well, not orphans, but young people with abilities. What happened?
You just said he was picking up orphans. I'm just like, oh, God.
No, no, not exactly orphans, but he does pick up. The first person he picks up is this 18-year-old. Notice, made sure she was 18 years old. Make sure of that, because this woman wasn't turning tricks per se, but she was giving people, you know, happy dream illusion things. And, you know, they show up just in time as the not-quite-mandroid guys and somebody in the helicopter show up to, you know, snatch her ass. And I'm like, really? Really? Just like that? Yeah, just like that. Okay, fine, whatever. So they rescue her, and then they show up at Oxford. Guess who's at Oxford?
Oh, gosh.
Take a wild guess. Oh, Charles! You know you love him. He's your brother. Stepbrother, and believe me, Moira, you do not want him at our wedding. Oh, no, it's Charles Xavier. And him and Moira, they're talking about getting married. So, yeah, this is that far back.
Jesus Christ almighty.
Yeah. So, here we have Professor X, soon, not quite Professor X, he's still a student, and Wolverine meeting face-to-face for the first time. No masks. No pretenses or illusions or anything else to hide them. And Logan drops it on him straight. And Charles goes, screw you, dude. I'm getting married. I'm just normal. Leave me alone. I want the sex. Leave me alone. And, you know, they decide to, okay, yeah, he's a punk. We need to go. You know, he'll find out. Typical rich kid. Nothing but a coward. A quitter. And, you know, we see Charles on the phone like, Moira, we have to talk. Yes, I'm afraid it's serious. Oh! So basically, Wolverine has motivated Charles To start learning about the X-Gene? Maybe? I don't know. Could that have been what happened? Doesn't matter, because the very next page is basically the next person on their list, and since we just finished talking about Xavier, can you guess who's next? Please, somebody, go right ahead. Guess who's next?
Apocalypse?
No, no. One more time.
Is it Magneto?
Bum, bum, bum! He comes across Eric Lenscher.
Who's of course he does.
Effing with this Nazi he found in, I think it was Argentina, and he's killing him with his medals. Oh, which was actually pretty funny in my opinion. But yeah. I had fun laughing at this book. You know, I kinda looked at this and went, really? They're doing this. You mean to tell me that Xavier and Wolverine had a face-to-face discussion, and I'm assuming this fits in continuity. So, let's say 10, 15 years later, Charles Xavier doesn't remember meeting Logan when he recruits him again? Are you, seriously? How does this not F with Giant Size X-Men 1? Or anything that has happened since? You know? Like, come on! Damn it. If I had never read Giant Size X-Men 1, it wouldn't be a problem. If you had never seen the contents or known how they met, this doesn't fuck with it. But we do have continuity, people. I'm sorry. It is there. And, you know, this book by Gage and Adams, it is just kind of tosses it on its ear, as far as I'm concerned. The story is, if you don't know anything, it's fine. That's really where it hinges, right there. If you don't know anything about past X-Men or past Marvel history, this story works for you. This story bothers me because I'm like, no. So I can't do a whole lot for it.
Nine.
I always enjoy Adam's art, you know, because he really makes Creed and Logan look bestial here. You know, I mean, he really plays up the teeth and the ears, and freaking Logan is hairy as all hell. he's hairy as all hell.
Well, this is before manscaping, so, you know, he's gonna go with what he's got.
That's Adam's thing, though. He loves manly men. That's just what he is.
Yeah, it's just manly men. Like, that's why he must have liked the Hal Jordan. It's okay art. The art is fine. And the story, again, the story quality hinges on whether you know nothing. You know, if you don't know anything, you can enjoy it. It'll move. It'll be fine. If you do, then you're gonna pick again. And he's just get that. So, if you like it, I think you'll enjoy it. It's probably worth maybe a 3.8 out of 5. If you're like me and you know what happened in Giant X-Men 1, then yeah, it'll be a 1.0 out of 5. If you like continuity, don't read this book. There, I'm saying it.
This wasn't as crazy as I wanted it to be. I'm not going to lie.
It's contrite also. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
you're totally right.
In the first book,
I honestly think if they would have just let Neil Adams do whatever the fuck he wanted, it would have been a lot, at least more entertaining. But
wait a minute. So do you think that they kind of forced him to use these two guys?
I think it might be a little bit more. Not, I wouldn't say editorial driven, because I don't think it is. I just think that the fact that it's not just him with the 100% control of whatever the hell happens, but it's another guy in there who is complete opposite of crazy Neil Adams, I think, yeah. I think that's what it is. I think, honestly, if they would have just Neil Adams do everything, Marvel doesn't seem to like people doing writing and drawing. They just don't seem to like it, you know, or at least all by themselves. I don't know why. But if they, I truly believe if this was just 100% Adams, you can argue quality, but it still would have been batshit insane and probably and at least entertaining. But yeah, this was really contrived in all the wrong possible reasons. Let's go to Arnold, who Spider-Man's a hero.
Oh, jeez.
And Storm's a dumb twat. I'm saying it.
Poor Storm. Poor a couple of people in this book.
Black Panther's awesome.
AVX number 9. Probably the most enjoyed AVX issue for me since it started. We start with Spider-Man kind of coming to. Apparently he's being effed up pretty bad. Gonna run through some of this fairly quick. Most of the Avengers are in Kunlun trying to recoup, also trying to free, are recouping in Kunlun and also porting back and forth and trying to save, members of the Avengers that have been in prison. Spider-Man's still kind of having his talk and his chats and daily sessions with Hope. But essentially tells you, you know, eventually that one day will come where you have to step up and it'll be your turn, to do that, and you know, it happens to all of us, and you'll never know, you know, when to expect it until it actually happens, and when it does happen, instinctively you'll know this is your time, that it's his essential power responsibility deal. Storm and Black Panther, dunzo, no longer together.
Wait, they were married?
And you showed up and thought he would just be okay, Storm? Just like, let me talk to you? No! I know it wasn't you specifically, but an X-Man, a person, a group of people you sided with, destroyed his whole country! How did you think he was going to react? And my favorite part about it, I'm trying to find it in the book right now, is like he barely even gives her a second glance. And my favorite moment of it all is, our marriage was annulled by the High Priest of the Panther Clan. You are not my wife anymore. The High Priest of the Panther Clan, you are the High Priest. Don't come back. That is it. No other words, nothing else. You're the High Priest. Don't come back here.
Yo, hold on. A-Train, let me ask you this. You've been reading the other X-Men stuff, right?
But yeah, pretty much.
Okay. How much of Storm did we see her trying to temper, you know, the Phoenix Force 5,
like,
or even
what's going on? Yeah, it may be once or twice here or there, but nothing like dramatic. Like, you didn't see her gather up a team and go after them or any kind of shit like that.
Oh, so basically we really didn't see her do what she said she was trying to do.
To the best of my knowledge, I haven't really witnessed it. I mean, not in any kind of grand gesture sort of way, but she has voiced her opinion, but just like everybody else is kind of being bitch-smacked to the wayside, like, you know, Phoenix Force 5 isn't trying to pay attention.
Well, how about before they even became Phoenix Force 5? Or what about when it was just mutants versus everybody else?
I honestly cannot remember.
Okay, because, I mean, if that had been the case where she was trying to temper that side of the battle line, then maybe. But if she didn't really do it, this right here is really just a way for them to break up the relationship in general for the Marvel Universe.
What relationship? When did they get married?
They got married.
This is a lie.
They got married right around when Civil War happened.
That's not the point. They never acted like a married couple. This was
bullshit. She was in the book.
Yeah.
She was a Black Panther in the Storm.
This is bullshit. Just saying. It's fine, but it's bullshit. I'm just saying.
You don't have to worry about it anymore because the High Priest annulled that shit. But said no more.
She didn't even drop a kid. I was looking for Black Panther. Wait a minute, hold up. That brings another point, and I'm sorry to, you know, poke in on you, A-Train, again, but what happened to his sister? His sister was Black Panther. Remember Doom War? Remember I reviewed
She was Black
everything?
Panther in Defenders.
She was exactly. So what happened to his sister?
I don't know.
Nobody gives a fuck about her?
Maybe, I guess. They just overlooked it.
I thought he was still the Black Panther. What happened?
His T'Challa had been attacked and she became the Black Panther.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah, this was right around the Dark Reign time.
Okay.
Oh, get this.
So they just did this. He showed up as Black Panther. Marvel, you suck!
Want to hear something even funnier? Continuity problems with Black Panther? Technically, Black Panther died in Defenders 2 issues ago.
Really?
Yes. Like the female Black Panther, I believe his sister proclaimed him dead.
Also, she was actually in Defenders.
Yep.
And here he's just Black Panther for no reason other than, well, T'Challa's always been Black Panther, so what the fuck? Seriously? Ah!
T'Challa, wait, I'm a bitch. Get back. The big boys are talking here.
That's fucking funny. Okay, please, A-Train, please, yeah, continue, bro.
No worries. So they've been breaking heroes out of limbo where they're being kept very much alien-style-y, being caught upside down and shit like that. But they're being overlooked by Colossus and Magic, of course, and, you know, they try to free people and it doesn't work out well, so they start getting attacked, and Spider-Man realizes this is it, this is his, you know, Avenger moment, as he calls it. Everybody's kind of down and out, and for the greater good, he essentially sacrifices himself. Suffice it to say, I'm going to lay this out right now, pretty much. Spider-Man gets his ass kicked by Colossus. That first punch, like, there are moments where a comic book, like, even in real life, it can make you just, you felt it for said fictional character. I felt this punch. Like, how often does Spider-Man get punched in the face and the mask is flat?
Thank you. That's exactly what I said to Iggy. It was like, oh my god, it looked like marshmallow.
That shit was crazy. Kudos to Kubert. I'm always a big fan of Kubert art, and this was done just really well. I even liked the way they split up the panels, and it was kind of a lot of back and forth, and, you know, it felt almost movie-like, where characters are having the conversation, you're constantly, the camera's just going back and forth in between the characters, but Peter Parker takes one for the team, and even within all of that, manages to cause two of the Phoenix Force members to take each other out. So, yay in the win column, but the
one... Spidey 1, Phoenix Force 5, 0.
Exactly. So, good for that, because we stopped the immediate threat, but unfortunately, because as we now know, when it's Phoenix Force 5 meets Highlander, meets Rising Stars, etc., etc., when one group loses the Phoenix Force power, it goes into all of the remaining members that originally had it. So Scott shows up, and he's glowing as shiny as it ever glowed, and it seems shit may hit the fan. So as we stand now with AVX, Phoenix member count is down to Emma and Scott now, right? Yes. Because Namor lost his power, Magic lost hers, and Colossus lost his, so now it's down to Emma and Scott.
By the way, what happened to Namor?
They
haven't said about it yet, have they? They followed up to it?
I guess he scurried off somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think they followed up to it yet. I don't think they've shown him since.
Yeah, see, that's because when he lost the power, he lost the power, the others started acting as if he wasn't there, and then they kind of went back to the spot where he was, and he was gone. Yeah. You know? So I don't see Namor leaving the area.
Maybe some of his Atlantean followers got him. Who knows?
He ran off.
Some Atlanteans were with him, so it's possible.
Okay.
This is going to come down to, in terms of Phoenix powers, it's going to come down to Scott and Hope. Like, there's no denying that. Although I still think, we're three issues from the end, I still think Wanda has a decent part to play in this, even though they haven't really shown her that much yet.
We got three issues to go, people.
Yeah, so I really think she's going to come into play, and also they mentioned her in the only issue of A versus X that I read, where after Iron Man beats Magneto, he's like, go find Wanda, find my daughter. So I'm hoping there's something to that, but issue 9, I've had some of these that I liked, I've had some that I was just not a fan of. This issue by far was one of my most favorite ones. Bravo, Spider-Man. Go fix your face, man.
I'll say this before we move on.
Out of 5, so.
I'll say this before we move on. That moment when the sequence with Peter Parker was Spider-Man was standing up to
Colossus
and Magic. That really, I told this to Taser off screen, or offline, whatever. That it really reminded me in the Infinity Gauntlet where after Thanos had fucking killed everybody. He says, as long as one man stands against you, Thanos, you know, I will stop you, whatever. And, you know, he's captain, like, it's just that he's the hero. And I read my books on the bus, and I literally went, oh my God, out loud. I never do that. And like all the people looked at me weird. I'm like, I'm putting this away now. I've never seen Spider-Man punched like that, or at least drawn to be punched like that.
Okie dokie then. So Is it my turn?
Yes, let's go to you, Brian.
Okay, we get Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe number one. It's a very different take on Deadpool than normal. Less comedy, more stabby, I suppose as Deadpool would put it. We open with the book, we open as most Elseworld tales do, with Uatu the Watcher narrating for us. And we close in on the Baxter Building, and they should... What?
Stop hearing things, continue.
Anyway, they close in on the Baxter Building, and they see Sue Storm cradling Reed. He's dying, he's kind of melting or whatever. And he tells her that he sent the kids to the negative zone to get them away, but the portal's closed, so they can't get them back now. And Ben's been ground down to dust, and Sue, hearing Johnny keeping up the fight, goes to find out what the fuck is going on. And she walks in just in time to see Deadpool slit Johnny's throat. And then he uses the blood to spot Sue, who has gone invisible, by covering her in it. And she blows up his head. And then he just pops right back up, fully regenerated, and stabs her through the heart. And so we pretty much just open with the assassination of the Fantastic Four. No jokes being flung here. No yellow boxes. Nothing. It's just Deadpool killing people. And then we have a little bit of a flashback to a scene where the X-Men, Professor X, Wolverine, Cyclops, and they commit Deadpool to Ravenscroft Asylum in New York, where he's under the care of Dr. Benjamin Brighton, I believe it is. And we find out in the book that Benjamin Brighton is actually Psycho Man, who is controlling a body in order to build up his own army of supervillains. He implants them, he takes control of their minds, and he plans to make Deadpool part of that new growing army. So we see him attempting to override Deadpool's mind, and as this is happening, we see the yellow boxes and the white line boxes kind of panicking, like, oh my God, it hurts. And then you see boxes go panicking, like, stop it. And you see him almost going insane again. And finally, it just kind of stops, and Deadpool is left with no yellow boxes, no white boxes. Instead, he has a very savage-looking red box in his mind saying, hello, Wade. And Deadpool's just kind of sitting there, and Psycho Man's like, okay, all done now. And Deadpool gets up and beats him to living death. I mean, it's just a body. So what he does is he pins the body down and pulls Psycho Man out of the back of the skull. And then he says, well, here's the thing. I need to get out of here, so I'm going to have you sign my release papers. Give me your stamp of approval. And proceeds to crush him on the paper. Literally stamping him with his body. And you just see blood splatter, and you see Deadpool just kind of walk out of there, the red boxes whispering in his ear. And he lights the place, he ignites the place, and it blows up, essentially. He kills everybody inside the asylum, which kind of walks away. And then kind of offhand, you just kind of see him go, hey, where are those other boxes, the other voices in my head? And you can just, it's almost sad, because I could actually hear, like, the red box all, like, dark and low, and just kind of, don't worry about them. You don't need them anymore. And it's just kind of like, holy sh- what the hell is going on? And so then, after we see Deadpool basically lay waste to a whole asylum, we cut back to the Baxter Building, where Uatu is continuing to narrate for us over the fallen bodies of the Fantastic Four. Deadpool tases Uatu, saying he can totally see him, that he knows he's there, and then he just kind of like, the red box is telling him, like, ask him. He's like, I want to know one thing. Who are you talking to? And they both look at the reader, and it's just kind of like, they can both see the reader.
They pulled an Animal Man.
Yes, they did. They broke the fourth wall. The red box wants to get to the audience, and no one really acknowledges it, because Uatu doesn't tell him anything, but he's like, and he literally says, quote, well, whoever they are, those little peeping Toms out there in Never Never Land, they're going to want to keep their eyes peeled. Decapitates Uatu. They're going to want to see what's next. They're going to want to watch this world burn. And so we end with Deadpool having a body count of the Fantastic Four, Watu the Watcher, Psycho Man, and a whole asylum worth of supervillains. And there's a little bit of a page showing just which villains are actually in the asylum. So there are the likes of Sandman, Green Goblin, the Vulture, Bullseye, Tiger Shark, Mysterio. All these guys are in the asylum under his care, and each and every one of them just got blown the hell up. So, and keep in mind, Deadpool has stopped making jokes at this point. He's listening to the red box in his head, and it's just kind of telling him, hey, just kill everybody. I'm hungry. Kill for me. And we really have no idea what this box is or how it, like, how the hell... I mean, it's breaking the fourth wall. There's really just, like, what the hell's going to happen next? Because I really don't have any idea. It's a very different Deadpool than what normally is out there. There's no... After he snaps in his head, there's no jokes. There's no acknowledgement that, hey, you know what, maybe I shouldn't be doing this, this is wrong. No second thoughts, no jokes, just straight up killing people. And so to see this all unravel is just really, really kind of strange, but also kind of awesome. Like, this is Deadpool going no holds barred. He just killed the Fantastic Four inside their own house. He just killed Killed Uatu the Watcher. You know,
okay,
he's
Wolverine hasn't done that.
Yeah. So, next issue, we're teased with Avengers Assassinated. So, we'll see how he plans to take on the Avengers next. But this book was just really, really just like straight up killing people. But I just want to see what happens next. I really, really do. And I got to give a tip of the hat to, Cullen Bunn, who wrote this. He's writing the series. And It was very well done. The shift in tone is a very apparent, and it works well for the book. And also, holy crap, I'm gonna completely murder your name. I apologize in advance. The artist, Dalibor Talajic. I think that's how it is. Great art, really keeping with a traditional Deadpool style, and I can't wait to see what happens next, because it's just really, really weird, but, you know, enough of me saying that. It was a great book, good read. I recommend you go pick it up if you want to see a very more drastic, dark take on Deadpool. I give it a 4 out of 5.
I mean, that shit sounds insane.
Oh my god, it's crazy. No pun intended. It's just, on top of everything else, they broke the fourth wall. They look right at you. It's just
Did
like,
it creep you the fuck out?
A little bit, yeah, because I'm like, wait, what do you mean? Who talking to? And then they just both look at me. I'm like, oh shit, they're talking about me.
It'd be cool, like, as if like they had Deadpool like crawl, like, you know, grabbing the end of the panel borders and trying to get out in a way, sort of like a 3D perspective shot. That would have been cool.
There's still time for it. It's 4 issues, I think, or could be more.
It's all gonna come out during this month, right?
Yeah, I think it's like consistently, because the next second issue comes out this week. So
it's a fifth week, baby.
Yep.
So since we're talking about Deadpool, normally this is our topic of the week, but we're gonna let B-Rai rant on this because over the past
it was on August 2nd this happened.
Rob Liefeld, co-creator of Deadpool and Cable, and of course, famed creator of Youngblood, horrible artist. Great ideas, man, as I said before, recently stated on Twitter that only D-list people write Deadpool.
Mm.
Basically back-smacking anybody who's worked on Deadpool since he's left. So apparently, Joe Kelly is D-list, Gal Simone is D-list, Daniel Way is probably D-list anyways, but... whatever.
Hey, Daniel Waze, he's at least B-list. Come on now.
So that means Cullen Bunn must be D-list.
Rick Remender.
Rick Remender has written Deadpool. And, of course, Rick Remender actually tweeted him back and sort of as like, you know, like, well, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Remender's not afraid to fight you. You're the Deadpool fan, but you don't like Rob Liefeld. Take it away, dude.
Okay. So let's just get this out of the way right now. Rob Liefeld is in no place whatsoever to go off like this. Okay, just saying his name induces laughter among regular comic book readers. I mean, come on. Where does a guy get off criticizing people like that as calling them D-list? The man himself is F-list, as in, hey, fuck you, Rob Liefeld.
I mean, come on. You have the nerve to call out dozens of writers and artists, both of which you are terrible at, by the way, who have worked on Deadpool over the years, belittling them because they aren't you? Is that what you're saying, Rob? Get over yourself. You've produced nothing of note since you founded Image Comics, and even then you got muscled out by your own co-founders because of your own debts and your lazy attitude toward artwork. You bastard.
That's true, didn't they? They kicked him out, didn't they?
They kicked him out because he was covering his own ass.
He's technically
Not only did they kick him out, they made a comic about kicking him out.
He's technically not an Image partner, right? He's technically
No, he left Image. He's out.
Well, he works for them right now, then, but he's not an Image partner anymore, right? That's funny.
Oh, my God. And seriously, he didn't even make Deadpool that memorable. He just created a dime a dozen killer with big guns and pouches and stuff.
Deathstroke ripoff, really.
Yes, even Fabian Nicenza, who co-created the character, pointed out when he brought it to Rob that it's Deathstroke the Terminator. But they created the character, and then it took the work of Joe Kelly to make Deadpool the wisecracking, insane mercenary that pretty much persisted since that series. He did nothing towards making Deadpool as memorable as he is today. Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness. And he did nothing towards making Deadpool memorable. All he did was create the character. That was it. And seriously, you're calling out D-list talent? Any book he works on nowadays is primed to be canceled, especially if he does the art on it. Because everyone in comic industry knows, Rob Liefeld, you suck at a lot of things, but artwork, it's definitely up there as numero uno. You are not an artist. And seriously, he has the nerve to rattle off people who he'd prefer to see cover his character, like Mark Miller and Jeff Loeb and Ed Brubaker, and no disrespect intended. They all have their spots. But Brubaker tends to only work when he's on his individually owned titles. Miller is just concerned with tits and explosions. And the less said about Jeff Loeb, the better. Okay? This is not... You want to put A-list talent on the book? There already is good talent on this book. Daniel Way has been writing Deadpool since 2008. 58 issues under his belt, not counting one-shots and tie-in books and stuff like that. And his run will continue up until the Marvel revamp. And he's already written Deadpool better than Liefeld. Rick Remender has been writing Uncanny X-Force since 2010, with 28 issues under his belt thus far and will likely continue past the revamp. And he's written Deadpool better than him. And Deadpool is only a supporting character in that title, mind you. Liefeld, just keep your mouth shut. And next time you go to post something on Twitter, think about it one time, and then think about it again, and then just don't post it, okay? Listen to me. This is... Fuck off. Where the hell do you get off? You slimy, arrogant, thieving bastard. How dare you? You can go straight to hell. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200 because your books can't even bring in that. I hope you never get work in the mainstream industry again, you sanctimonious, talentless prick. I hope Rick Remender and Daniel Way co-write your eulogy so that I can call it D-list work. Fuck off.
Well done, sir.
Nice!
Well done, sir.
I need a drink.
Like, doesn't he deserve just a little bit of credit for creating the character?
No, because he created a clone character. The guy who
it was made on purpose that way. Just
but the Deadpool that is famous, that has drawn the legion of fans that is today.
That was Joe Kelly.
The
guy who created the personality, yes. But however, he did create the character. If without him...
Characters like Deadpool were the standard back in this time era, and even then, he only ripped off Deathstroke the Terminator to create the character.
Like I said before, Rob Liefeld's the horrible parent, and Joe Kelly was the nice adoptive father to take him away from the bad parent.
I like that.
I mean, that's what this is. Like, sure, yeah, he created the character. He loves to remind everybody he created Deadpool. He loves to do that.
That's all this is. This is just a cry for attention on Liefeld's part because nobody's like, well, I created Deadpool, and I'm the only good guy.
He's been living off that since 1988. Mm. Youngblood sure ain't telling
get
anymore.
A new line, douchebag!
I'm just saying, really. Like, it was really out of line for especially Liefeld, of all people, to call people out on their artistic abilities.
Oh my God! Don't even get me started on that Captain America. Oh my God! No, not going there.
Everybody references.
Yeah.
Well, even then, just look at his individual work. I believe there was a poster once where, like, girls are just, like, their spines are bent in a 90-degree angle, and it's just, like...
They have no spine. Like, they have no... Their organs would not fit.
Oh, my God.
That was during the Batgirl art days. I remember that.
His time has passed. His time ended in 1993.
I don't even know why you're paying him this much. We're just giving in by paying him this much attention. He's not even relevant anymore. He's just, like... off the radar.
This is why I don't want the Deadpool. I hope when they make the Deadpool movie, it doesn't say Deadpool created by Rob Liefeld.
Hold on. If he gets that kind of flack for Deadpool, what about Cable?
Cable, see?
People love Cable. And yeah, Cable does not have any great personality to speak about.
No. But the thing we're talking about is the fact that he blasted a whole bunch of people. Because no argument. Yeah, if he had said the same thing about Cable, we would be bringing up Cable. Cable is really just a Terminator. He was Deathlok, again.
That's a bit. I think that's stretching it a bit.
Time traveler who looks like a half a cyborg. Come on.
Yeah, but Death. Like being a time traveler, that's kind of, depending on which...
Well, not even that, but...
Okay, but...
I'm just saying, he's...
Okay.
Cable's cool, in a weird way. Deadpool, as his original creation, was just a merc for hire who looked like Deathstroke. That's really what it was. Same mask, same sort of half-line thing, swords, guns. That's really what it is. So, I guess we're done with that. If you want to contact us at the warriorstudio@gmail.com. That means you, Rob, because I guarantee you're going to find out about this, which means we will never...
And also, for the record, in the issue the Cable Identity debuted in, Todd McFarlane co-illustrated the issue, so...
No one... That's probably the best...
So McFarlane gets some credit, too, then!
Oh, great.
Pretty much,
that
yeah.
He's going to bring lawyers. If you want to contact us at thewarriorstudio@gmail.com, twitter.com/warriorstudio3pcast. Arnold has our Facebook stuff taken care of. I have a very special announcement to make. D-Cups is not on hiatus. We're still doing it. We're just waiting for Chris to see The Dark Knight Rises. We will be recording that, and we will be releasing our views on Dark Knight Rises, the Batman trilogy, the Nolan trilogy, as well as future Warner Brothers films. Also, I don't know when Kuhan's ever going to release this, but we are doing a new show, which is basically, it's called D's Nuts, or Mr. Dragon's Nuts.
Yes, because there's a big demand for that.
It's basically, here's the pit, it's basically just us shooting the shit and talking about whatever we want. Kuhan like talking to us, so it's basically just a Skype call that happened to be recorded. Let the hilarity.
Yeah, I'm passing on that one. I like you guys.
I'll say this.
But no.
We don't really.
Simpsons did it.
I'll say this. There's a moment in this week's show where I'm playing Dead Space and they caught me screaming on recording. So
at least I might tune in for that.
I'm sorry. That's still not enough. Look, the two of them.
It's a casual show. We don't really care. We honestly don't. It's just something that we're technically calling it a show is too much of a stretch. It's just us hanging around and the recording button happened to be hit.
Then you know what you should do? Bring in Taz Mission for that.
Do it.
And with that notion, we're going to get out of here as we creep ever closer to the core cast. We will pass you guys. We will see y'all next week for episode number 113. Oh my God, I have no Marvel books next week. We'll see y'all next week.
I need a script.
Listen to the later stuff. Listen to the later stuff.
It's the S, the L, the I, the M. Let me tell you what I wanna do. Let me show you that I feel you. Wanna freak, wanna ride with you. Wanna taste, wanna put my lips all over you. Can't get enough of you. Always thinking of you. So sweet, I can't forget. So good, girl, you make me sweat.